This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 899, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Honestly, you need to be watching your ass out there right now. I don't know what's going on.
Did you say washing your ass?
Watching.
Oh, both.
I mean, the other one is a solid tip at any point.
Plowing these fields in the hot summer sun. Over by the gate, Lordy, here she comes with a basket full of chicken and a big cold jug of sweet tea.
Hey, this is Josh Flanagan, and this is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
Hey there. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 899.
899.
We can focus on that next week.
We will get you that price for $7.99.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what we're trying to do to make it look like it's a slightly better bargain than 900 episodes. Every week.
This is the bargain episode.
899 weeks, one of us has picked the book. That has been consistent. We're better at it now, I would like to think.
Oh, yeah.
That book, that best one, that's called the Pick of the Week. We talk about the other books in the stack of comics that come out every week. You know, if you're new here at episode 899.
Welcome.
welcome. It's mostly, you know, it's your mainstream weekly comics, the issues. That's what we focus on. We will talk about the pick of the week. We'll talk about the other books. As I said, this is a patron pick where the folks who are on Patreon vote. And then they force us to read a book, but nicely. They gently force us. They force us
sometimes,
like
sometimes the level of niceness depends on the week, let's be fair.
Yeah, but they force it like, you know, like we like being forced a little.
That was a friendly forcing of another Dark Horse horror book. They did that for a year.
It's kind of hot. We will answer listener mail if we have time. And we're not so far, it's not looking good. Just right away.
We skipped last week. We got to do it this week. Although we're doing so many next week and it doesn't matter. We're going to try to do it this week.
There's a spoiler warning right now. Anything from here on out, it could ruin the books had you not read them. However, I like to think that even if we did spoil a plot point for some reason, we will enhance the books. That's what we do. We're comic book issue enhancers, I hope. That's kind of the deal. Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and surprising probably no one, the pick of the week was Transformers number one from Image Comics, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson with Mike Spicer and Russ Wooten. I mean, who's surprised? We've been loving Void Rivals. We loved, what was his wrestling book called?
Had a very weird title.
It's a Mario. That was what came to my head. That's not it. It's a wrestling mat. Something.
It's a fight. Wow. This is so bad.
We loved it so much. We can't remember what it was called, but you know, we love Beta Ray Bill. I'm a big fan of. It's called Do a Power Bomb. Everybody.
There it is. I told you it was a weird title.
I think I decided after reading this that he's my favorite creator.
He's your new Darwin Cook.
And the thing is, he doesn't do a ton of work. I was thinking about this. One of the reasons I was so excited for this book, because, you know, in addition to the fact that I think what Robert Kirkman's doing with the Energon universe.
Come on now.
Is, you know, exciting. He's doing G.I. Joe and Transformers, and he's a guy of our age who grew up with those things. And, you know, it's going to be, I think, hopefully fun. So I was excited for this. But then I was like, wait, when's the last time I read Daniel Warren Johnson? And it was Do a Power Bomb. I didn't read the Justice League, Jurassic League book.
He didn't draw it. Doesn't count.
So it's been a while. This was his first pick of the week this year, so which means Do a Power Bomb was last year, and we're in October. So it's been a while. And so I was very excited to see his art, which is, like, again, we talked about it before, the most dynamic art in comics. And one of the things I loved right off the bat was that, well, it didn't happen right off the bat of the issue, but right off the bat of reading it was he brought some of his Do a Power Bomb over to the Transformers, in which when they fight, they go at it wrestling style.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Let's go back to the beginning. Opens up with a shot of Vietnam. And I was like, oh my God, we already started in the G.I. Joe part, but it wasn't G.I. Joe. It was Spike's dad who was wounded in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Lots to love here. I think some good world building, some good character building, some fun bits. Spike and his lady friend discover the ship that crashed here that had the Transformers, the Decepticons, and the Autobots on it. They're almost all out of power. They're all beaten up. And slowly but surely, they all come back to life. And first of all, it was fun because we've also talked about the fact that over the years, we were huge G.I. Joe fans. We liked the Transformers, and I watched them certainly as a kid as much as I watched the G.I. Joe cartoon. And I had a ton of Transformers toys, but I'm not like a super huge Transformers guy. And like, I don't know them all or their backstories. I know the big ones, but it was fun to sort of reacquaint with them. I love the use of scale with Spike and his friend amongst the Transformers. There's one point where they have to get Optimus Prime's blaster to him. Yep. And they're pushing it across the floor and they're tiny like Ant-Man. That was awesome. Like, it was just all kinds of fun stuff like that. I'm looking at the part where Optimus Prime, I don't know the name of the wrestling move. It's not a suplex, but he does the wrestling move on Starscream and slams him into the ground. And then he clotheslines him at one point. I don't think I've ever seen the Transformers fight like this before. Maybe in a Michael Bay movie, but it didn't look as much fun as this. I just loved everything about this. The part with Bumblebee was really sad, where Bumblebee was maybe dead.
That is a suplex.
Is it a reverse suplex?
No, I think the suplex comes around the back.
Isn't the suplex where you lift them up straight in the air and the legs are straight up and then you fall backwards?
Possibly.
It's been a while since I watched wrestling.
The move that he's doing here, you wouldn't do in wrestling because it would kill them. You know what I mean? So like the one that you're talking about, yes, but this would break their neck in real life. So that's really interesting. I don't think I put that together exactly that we were seeing it. I noticed very dynamic fighting, but I didn't put it in terms of wrestling.
For the page before that, Optimus Prime clotheslines him.
Yeah, there's a running clothesline I was about to say. That's fucking great.
Ravage appears. I used to love.
Fucking love.
I had those toys. I used to love playing with Ravage. Ravage. It was like an adrenaline shot to my nostalgia glands. Daniel Warren Johnson's a huge Transformers nerd. He talks about it in his essay in the back. Mm-hmm. How he was bringing an Optimus Prime toy to school for show and tell, and he lost part of it on the bus. And
it was an essay. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, that's an image essay. It's weird. It was just fun. There's not a ton to... I mean, we know that... They've crashed. We know from other books that there's not a lot of Energon left on their home planet. And so we only have a handful of Transformers here. It's not like there's an army of thousands. It's pretty much like four on each side at this
point. But there's more.
Right.
To be revived, so there's ways to keep adding.
And no Megatron. In fact, when Megatron is brought up, Starscream shuts that down real fast.
Well, there's a whole...
Because he is the... he's kind of the major blood of the Transformers. Oh. He wants that spot for himself, the leadership spot.
Which is odd, because he's actually Cobra Commander's voice, so...
Right. I'm looking right now at the Autobots escape from the ship, and a bitchin' tractor trailer, and ambulance, and they make a little jump out the... It's just exciting and high-octane and fun. And if you're going to do a Transformers book... For me, it's got to be those things. And that's what this was.
So when I read this, I liked it. And I actually did wonder for a second if this was going to break your Daniel Warren Johnson spell. Not because there was anything wrong with it, but I wasn't quite sure what your relationship with these characters is outside of, you know, we were kids when we were kids. It was a big deal. But I find it very interesting that this didn't hook like G.I. Joe did. And I've, for many years, tried to read Transformers comics.
Well, the comics weren't as good.
They just never had the
thing.
That's
just the
bottom line.
And it's also they're giant robots, and you don't relate to them as much as people, just sort of inherently.
I have my comic book friend. I mention him all the time on the show.
We need to give him a name. Can we call him like Bob or something?
His name's Patrick.
We can use a fake name, though. That's
I just said his real name, though. It's fine.
Okay. What's his last name, and what's his social security number?
506-29453. Wouldn't it be terrible if I accidentally just gave you mine? I'm trying to play it off. Anyway, him and I were talking about it, and they're not as good. They're not as good as G.I. Joe.
No.
Like, the stories aren't.
No, they're not.
I don't remember anything about the cartoon series at all.
I vaguely remember it, but I remember watching it every
Right, but every we remember week. So many details about G.I. Joe, and it isn't because we've watched it 100 times. It just stuck with us in a way that this stuff didn't. But I feel like, as I read through the beginning of this, that shot of the ship stuck in the mountain with the, you know, the four big, I feel like the beginning of this is very similar to the beginning of the original animated show.
Hmm.
There was shades of familiarity about it. And I don't know if that started with, and there's people who are listening and who know this, like, you know, other people know the Bible or, you know, but it, to me, I felt like it was like, I think he's doing it pretty straight in terms of that show. And somebody will probably confirm or deny that. And I kind of liked that in a way, but I kind of wasn't sure about the choice. And as I sort of went through it, it was good. But, you know, everything was amped up. What he's doing here is, I think, very smart, because for years, since 1986, the deal was you would take these things and you would make them dramatic and you would give them real personalities. And he went, no, nope, I'm going to amp them up. I'm going to make it like the cartoon, but more.
More exciting.
More exciting, more. The cartoon was never good. You know, like it was written for kids. It was, you know, and he's not making it into Watchmen here, but. No. You know, it's for an adult audience, whatever.
It's more elevated.
But he's giving it what it should. He's making it fun. He's making it silly. He's not trying to turn it into literature. He's not doing that. He's saying, all right, awesome. We're going to do the thing that the cartoon did. We're going to do it really well. But we're not breaking the mold on that. And I think that that's the right.
And they're not Michael Baying it up.
No, right.
There's tons of those properties that we love. This game. And hell, I read a He-Man comic this week. It's fine. It's fun. But I wouldn't put it at this level.
No, I mean, but you're talking about like an A-list creator. I think. I don't know.
I mean, Tim Seeley writes the He-Man comics. He's in a slouch.
Yeah, but
just property-wise, it doesn't... Like, I remember, you know, every day, G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, Mask, Thundercats. I watched all those cartoons after school. But for whatever reason, G.I. Joe is the one that stuck. And I really do think it's because those comics are really excellent.
See, that wasn't it for me, because I didn't read those until I was an adult.
But for me, it was like me and all my friends also read G.I. Joe in addition to watching it. And that's kind of why it elevated. I remember reading some Transformers comics. I definitely had the miniseries where Spider-Man showed up in his black costume.
I can see it.
But I don't remember anything about those comics. And those other properties, like Thundercats, if they were like, we're doing a Thundercats book, I'd be like, cool, enjoy. Like, it's just not, it didn't stick with me as a thing. I have no desire to watch the He-Man reboot on Netflix, even though I loved He-Man as a kid and had the toys and everything.
But the thing is, all of those properties, for the most part, were derivative of the G.I. Joe formula, which is... come up with a bunch of characters so that you can sell toys and build out from there. And, you know, as far as I know, I tend to think of G.I. Joe as the, you know, progenitor of that. I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, there was also Voltron that came from Japan.
But that was different. Robotech. Because, I mean, were they toys first, or was it? It doesn't matter. That was the thing about the 80s. Either way, I put Transformers like a step below your G.I. Joe. You know, and I don't think about it. The fact is, like, I don't think about any of those things anymore, but except for G.I. Joe. That was my favorite. Who knows? This comes sort of right after that. But in my terms of like...
I would put
like,
that right behind it. I think because the movies helped. I mean, you know, the movies got ridiculous and bad, and I'm waiting for the new one to hit.
That movie was great. That was a moment.
I'm waiting for the new one to hit HBO or whatever it's going to be on. I really did have fun with the first Michael Bay one. I enjoyed that. I think that helped sort of make Transformers into a property that transcended its roots. There's a magic in Peter Cullen's voice.
So when you said the movie, I was talking about Transformers the movie.
No, I'm talking about the billion-dollar grossing Michael Bay film.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That made it a cultural phenomenon, you know, that transcended the fandom of the cartoon. And I had fun with that first one. They got progressively worse. I stopped watching them. But, you know, there is something about it that still speaks to me. So I was very excited to read this.
The G.I. Joe movie and the Transformers movie came out at the same time. And in this one instance, the Transformers movie is light years better.
The G.I. Joe movie is bad.
Yeah, it's bad. It totally is.
It's like a poor understanding of the property. I know we have to move on with this last week, but I do want to mention that, you know, as part of this license moving to Skybound, you know, they're doing all the G.I. Joe books, and they announced that they're going to keep the Larry Hama G.I. Joe going, which you and I read the end of because we thought it was going to be the end of it.
300.
We talked about it on the show last year. But then I saw in the back here an ad for the restart, and I was like, oh, I don't know. Then I saw Chris Mooneyham is drawing it. I was like, oh, fuck.
Who's writing it?
Larry Hama's writing it. Chris Mooneyham is drawing it.
So he's writing the restart and the continuation?
He's writing the continuation book.
Right.
Josh Williamson's doing the other two books.
Okay, that was my question. That answered.
I think Chris Mooneyham's terrific. And I was like, oh, shit. So I might have to check all the G.I. Joe books.
I think the artist for a G.I. Joe comic book that Larry Hama writes should be completely forgettable.
I don't think that's true at all. That's actually an email question later. Mm-hmm. I remember the better artists on those books.
M.D. Bright. Right. Or Mark Bright.
And Steve Laiola.
Was he the artist for it?
Who did the Vietnam stuff.
No shit.
He did the Vietnam ones. Let's move on to Fantastic Four 705/12. I thought about this book for Pick of the Week, Ryan North, Iban Coelho. And this one, at first you're just like, Ryan North is going for it.
Yes.
There's definitely a mood in the air lately of not full on Silver Age, but like, we shouldn't be afraid to have fun here.
It's funny because I didn't think about this in terms of Silver Age, but now that you say it, I was like, oh, this is totally, you know, like the Flash is a bear, you know, for one issue. And I mean, the thing is, every issue of this has mostly stood on its own. Sometimes there's two issues, but every one is like a full restart from whatever happened before. Like there's an ongoing thing. They're waiting. They're basically taking a year off. And because they're waiting for the kids to come back around. But it's weird because, like, it's easier, I think, to write a 5 or 6 page arc than to do...
Issue arc?
Than to do, you know, he's got to have, like...
Short stories are hard.
10 original stories throughout this.
It's so much better, though.
I know, but, it takes a toll. Like, how many stories people have in them... You know, and every time, like,
sure,
he's pushing. I'm sure if you ask
As a reader, though, we talked about this. If you don't like the arc, you're stuck there for 6 months.
Oh, I totally get it. Arc. I'm thinking of it in terms of, like, as the creator, you're taking a heck of a toll on yourself. You're playing offense and defense. You know, you're Deion Sanders. And for most people, it's going to take a toll on you. I suspect, having talked to Ryan North for a while at one time, like, he'd be like, nah, it's fine. I'm cool with it. I don't know. I feel like he's like a fount of these things. It makes it impressive. That's all. Most people don't/can't do that.
Before I get to my criticism that I noticed early and I couldn't get past once I did, the main thing here is that the Fantastic Four gets sucked through a portal in the multiverse and they end up at a planet where the dinosaurs evolved instead of the apes. And so everybody's a dinosaur, which means the dinosaur version of the Fantastic Four end up in our world.
And not an anthropomorphic dinosaur. A fucking full-on dinosaur in the superhero costume. Like, they committed to it entirely.
The world is bigger. Everything was built bigger. Right. I thought it was funny. And they couldn't all fit on ships because they were too heavy.
At one point, there's a cityscape behind them. And I was like, the cityscape looks just like a regular city. And then, sure enough, they was like, hey, these buildings are dinosaur size. And, like, that was all you needed to say. I thought about it, you know, and I put it there.
And cool stuff like, you know, Reed throwing together a translator. Like, it was a very, like, fun Fantastic Four. It's the stuff you want, sciencey, ridiculous. Now, the very first page of this story.
I know where this is going. I saw it.
Has this been happening the entire time?
Ben Grimm has no neck.
Ben Grimm has no neck. And the head is even the right size. It's tiny.
I know.
It looks like that character that's wearing a Ben Grimm suit. There's that character in the Fantastic Four that wears like a Ben Grimm suit and just their tiny head on the top. That's what I thought was happening. I was like, why does Ben Grimm have no neck and why is his head so tiny and round?
So I saw it on the first page and at first I thought, what the fuck is that? And then I thought, oh, this must be a clue that what we are seeing is not what is happening, and they'll come back around, which did not happen. But the thing that is the most interesting about it is that, yes, as soon as you said there's the thing, I was like, it's the fucking head. I know it's the head. Which is just such a weird fucking choice. Because
it's so weird. How is no one? I'm looking at page 5 with the two panels in the middle, and it's like, no, has no one noticed that his head is like half the size it should be?
So that happens at the beginning, and you're like, is this the same guy who's been drawing it all along? And I look, it is. And then later in the book, the dinosaur stuff is fucking amazing.
No, I love the Iban Cole art. I like how sort of over the top the art is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very exaggerated. The facial expressions are like, you know, dialed to 11. The action, super dynamic. I like all that. I think it's perfect for this book. It's just this one thing. Once I noticed it, I couldn't unsee it. And it really kind of bugged me the whole time.
Look at the last page. It's
great.
Amazing.
It's great.
It is.
Dr. Dumasaur.
It is as good a splash page as I have ever seen.
It's a great final page.
It's fantastic. Like, look at the grimace on Reed's face.
That's what I mean. Like, look how like anguished he is. Everything is so dialed up, and I love it. It's so melodramatic.
Why does
great
he have no
book.
Neck, though?
I don't understand.
It's
I don't know how that got through editorial.
It's the strangest thing. I know how it got through editorial.
Yeah, I know. They're all overworked, underpaid. I'd like to point out the cover for the next issue is human Dr. Doom riding the Dr. Doom dinosaur.
I mean, that idea. Just the concept.
Be here in 1 month, folks. That's got a good chance of being the pick of the week.
That alone should have a good chance of winning an Eisner. Like, what do you, what else do you want? What do you, are you not entertained? You know what I mean?
Shazam number 4 was the other book that was in my discussion for pick, and for similar reasons to Fantastic Four.
Huh.
The Mark Waid-Essence. We talked about how much fun he brings to the table with this book and with Batman Superman. Ironically, his Teen Titan book, which I was most excited for, was probably the least successful. And it's because he's not afraid to have the Silver Age fun. Again, this is what I'm talking about. There's sort of that vibe has returned to comics. I'm not saying it's returned right now, but it's been an undercurrent for a little while.
I feel
while.
Like somebody noticed that no one really reads or cares anymore. So they're like, ah, fuck it, let's have fun.
We've got astronauts from Gorilla City. We've got Queen Bee. We have the gods that Captain Marvel gets his powers from fighting over who gets to influence him. So super horny Zeus takes over when Queen Bee is around. Like, that was funny. It was just really, I'm looking, God, look at page 18. We talk about Dan Moore. Also, there's the accountant dinosaur. Like, it's silly, but in a really fun and not stupid way. That's the fine line you have to walk with these Silver Age books, is it can't be dumb.
But it can be ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Page 22, the monkey in the suit. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a lot going on here, and Dan Moore is drawing the hell of it. I know he's not doing two currently, because he's sort of taking a step back on the World's Finest book while that other dude draws it. But these pages are chock full of just craziness.
That's what he brings. I gotta say, I like this. It's good. I'm reading it. I don't have a heck of a lot of connection to these characters and concepts, so it's a little less fun for me in that I've never really liked Captain Marvel all that much, just as a thing. Like, it's kind of interesting, but I'm not super into it.
Which is interesting, because you were a fan of that Judd Winnick Captain Marvel book.
Yeah, but that I think that at the time that had, I mean, that's one miniseries out of stuff.
Very famously, that was the pick of the week when you had your appendicitis, and we had to do the show without you.
I don't even remember what it was about that. It was new, and I like, but whatever. Like, it's just, it's not one of my favorites, and so I don't have like a big connection to it. So I can kind of appreciate it on one level. You know, the comic book level's really good. There was a bit here where he's like, I'm the captain. I was like, oh, it's terrible. I hope that hurts. I hope that hurts, Mark.
It's terrible, but it's so much better than him being his own name.
No, which
Shazam,
he's not supposed to say out loud, so it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But I just thought, there's no way that Mark Waid doesn't cringe when he has to do that. There's no way.
Actually,
that's not true. Maybe in order to do it, he's probably got to convince himself, this is fine. Anybody's worked at a
it's
job
better
that
than
you
the
hated, you've, you know. Yes, it's fine. I liked it. I wouldn't have said pick of the week, but I totally understand why you would. It's fine.
As an aside, I don't know what Robert Venditti's got on someone at DC, but I'm excited for this Sandman book.
I didn't actually read the preview.
I didn't either. I don't read previews, but just the fact that it's coming
Riley
out.
Riley Rossmo. Look, it looks
Riley Rossmo's drawing it.
Wow.
Like, Jesus, how'd that happen?
Because nobody cares. So you can just do whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
So I'm very curious to hear what you thought of the final issue of Sins of the Salt and Sea from AWA, the Ed Brisson and C.P. Smith book. I don't know who else did it because there was no creator page on our review copy.
So issue one's pick of the week.
Yep.
As we get further into what is going on, we find out basically there's a cult. The cult has to make a sacrifice to stop the monster that lives in the Salton Sea, who is an avatar of nature, who is angry that the humans have destroyed nature. Maybe. The main character sort of adds an element of doubt to that to the end.
You're never supposed to really know for sure if it's true or not. Or
well, something's happening. There is a big monster, unless they're all having a mass hysteria episode.
Well, I mean, until this issue.
Right. No, then they left no doubt about it in this one. What I would say is that you are not David Chase, and this is not The Sopranos. And I was really fucking angry.
I loved the ending. Oh, I loved it. God. I loved it. The whole thing is the kid of the cult leader is the one who we're going to sacrifice, and our main character has been protecting him from the cult. And the whole time they're like, listen, we don't want to kill the kid, but otherwise everyone dies. And the main character's like, I got to protect the kid. You can't kill the kid. So he does it. He saves the kid. He kills all the cult members. He saves the kid from the tentacles. And then the world ends.
We don't know that. No.
I kind of like that as like,
there's a big flash of light.
Thing blows up into fire and cuts to black.
I know, but we don't know what it is, which is why I don't like it.
I liked it.
I don't think that it was a strong choice given what had come before. In that, what I am saying is that there was all of a sudden, like this was slammed into the last issue, was this suddenly became a metaphor for humans' environmental irresponsibility.
Yeah, they hadn't brought that up before. That was, I don't think it needed that. It was just a monster that was going to end the world. And
well, no, but I think that that's tied in with a message that's going on. I mean, look, here's the metaphor. We're all going to die unless we make some sacrifices. You turn down your air conditioning, you drive less, you do whatever, and we refuse to do any of that stuff. In this way, the main character, Rock and Roll from G.I. Joe,
he's us.
He is us. He's the worst part of us. He's like, we don't know that this will all happen. In that case, as I'm talking it through, then you're right. Yes, he screws up. The world ends. Everything goes to black. It became a different kind of story than it was at the beginning.
Well, the beginning was a crime. I know. It was a heist book. They were doing heist.
I think is an experiment and I think is valid, but it wasn't what I signed up for. It wasn't what I was excited about. In the end, it's just a metaphor about environmentalism, which I agree with.
Much like the people you were just talking about, you were seeing what you wanted to. Because in that first issue, there was the mention of the monster.
I didn't see it. Or I saw it, but I thought maybe they're just crazy people. Because the idea was, I think the thing I probably said was, hey, it's not supernatural. There was the hint of it, whatever. And I thought maybe that was a red herring. I don't know one way or the other, but I just, by the end, it had gone full tilt in the other thing. I think the metaphor was some sort of weird mix of well done and heavy handed. To me, it changed from under me. And I don't necessarily think, I will revise. I think at first I thought, what the fuck was that? And I was thinking of it as the absence of a choice. As I got through the last few pages, I was thinking to myself, what could they possibly do here that would be satisfying? In terms of a story, what can they do that is going to make you feel like you finished a story? And I was like, I have no idea. And then they chose, I thought at first to not make a choice. But as I talk about it, they did make a choice.
They chose death.
And it's valid, but I don't think I enjoyed it.
I laughed when it ended because, you know, rarely does the hero lose so spectacularly.
Right. But if we're taking the metaphor, then he's not the hero. He's the person who thinks
he's the protagonist of the book. Really, does the protagonist fail so spectacularly while they're succeeding, right? He thinks he's succeeded. He's killed all the guys.
I don't think he thought he was succeeding. I think that he went, I don't fucking care. I don't know the difference. I don't know what to do. So I'm going to just do this.
Well, he never really bought it.
Yeah, but he saw the monster. Like again, that's the metaphor. Like, the evidence mounts and mounts and mounts and mounts. His brother is like, you know, you didn't fucking see it. I'm serious.
He sees it, but it's also like, at that point, he's so deep in keeping his kid safe that he doesn't.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter. The only thing matters is saving.
Clinging to our way of life and the sort of backward hope that things are going to be fine. Like, we'll get through it. We always get through it. We'll do it.
I applauded the choice. When it happened, I laughed because, you know. Yeah,
again, working through it, I still didn't enjoy it. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it because I think that helps me work through it. It's certainly interesting. I think they're bold, interesting choices, but it's just not what I want. I don't need to feel shitty about the environment. I guess that makes me the guy.
But I didn't feel shitty. I mean, I get it. It wasn't like a revelation. Oh shit, things are bad. Like, I know things are bad. It's just more of like the idea of how the story wasn't told. And I thought it was compelling in that sense.
That's very fair. I can't say they half-assed it.
I'm sitting here in 90 degree weather in October. So I know it's like shitty.
Dude, it's mid 80s all week. This is not the October I was promised. I like skiing, Connor.
Let's take a quick break here and talk about how, hey, we're at episode 899. We've been doing this for, is it 18 years? Is it 18 years? That's a long time. We could not do without you, the listener, those of you who say, hey, these guys bring some entertainment to my life. They bring some interesting conversation into my comic book reading. They are an additive to my I'll say my sad existence. Not about you, just the world. Yeah. We just talked about why.
They're mature enough to admit their mistakes and the sort of misinterpretation and come up with new information, which I think is a good thing we should all be able to do. Apparently, it's a moral choice now.
Hopefully, we make it a little, you know, a little less unbearable.
Bearable. We want to make it more.
We make it a little less unbearable. Unbearable. A little more
okay,
bearable.
That's good. I have been ill.
That's okay. That's okay. You have been. It's all right. So those of you who choose to help support the show, we thank you very much. We have bills that must be paid, and you help to do that. You help make the time away from our families. I mean, I'm doing this right now when I should be eating dinner. Worth it. And we thank you for that. And the main source of help are the fine folks over at patreon.com/ifan, where they help support the show directly. They have in the past unlocked great shows for everyone. They're part of a great community that's on Discord and Facebook. We just had our monthly patron hangout last weekend. It was super fun. We did 3 hours on a Saturday. Had a good time. And we hope that, you know, you find your patronage worth it. To that end, we added the tier exclusive merchandise. So there's merchandise that only the patrons get. T-shirts and sweatshirts and mugs and posters and all kinds of things. As a way of saying thank you for being a patron. Thank you for being a friend. If you think you want to be a patron, patreon.com/ifanboy is the place to go. You can do just $1 a month. If everybody listened to $1 a month, we would have a lot less stress in our lives. And so we thank you very much. And we appreciate it. And we appreciate you. And also, if you buy a t-shirt at fanboy.threadless.com, we got 13 t-shirt designs over there. We thank you as well. I was just looking at my shirts. I put one on for the hangout, and I thought I need some new shirts. I need a couple of new ones. But there's a couple that I like, but are getting old and wearing them a lot. So I might have to re-up some shirts. If you want to re-up some shirts, fanboy.threadless.com. Threadless is always having sales. Around the holidays, they're always running a sale. There'll probably be a Thanksgiving sale. There'll probably be a Christmas sale. Pick up some shirts while they're having a sale. We appreciate that. Fanboy.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. Powerballs this week. $1.2 billion at last count. If you're the winner.
10 mil.
Let's talk.
10 mil.
Let's talk.
I think that's fair.
That's fair. Or 18, one for every year we've been doing this.
I agree.
Let's talk. You won't even notice 18 million if you win the $1.2 billion. You won't even notice it. Fanboy.com/Amazon is our shopping link, as well as our Booksplode links. You'll find all the Booksplodes there, except for the most recent one, which I keep forgetting to update. And then bookshop.org is our partner to help support local bookstores. You can find those links in the Booksplode posts and anywhere else appropriate. Thank you for helping us out. All the different ways to support the show as we reach our milestone 900th episode next week. We really could not have done this without you for this long. We would not be here. And thank you very much. Let's move on to Peacemaker, Tri-Star, Book 6, the final issue of this Kyle Stark, Steve Pugh, Jordi Belair, Becca Carey, Black Label miniseries. And I've enjoyed this, although I haven't loved it. I'm not a big Peacemaker fan. I read it mostly for the creative team. However, I thought this issue had some real heart to it. I thought the sacrifice in the middle was very heartfelt. I thought the whole bit with Peacemaker and the bees and the honey was very heartfelt when he left the mask. I didn't expect Kyle Starks to reach into my heart and massage it this week, but he did. Did you finish this or did you give
it? No, I was like, oh, you're talking to me like I read it and I feel like I'm about to disappoint you.
You left this book.
I'm aggressively uninterested in Peacemaker.
I am too, but I really like Kyle Starks and Steve Pugh. And so I kept
talking about that. I do too. And that's how uninterested in Peacemaker I am.
I will say this, it was an enjoyable series. There was some really funny moments, unexpected moments of heartbreak. And then the ending is classic DC. It's very similar to a situation that happened way back in Justice League number 9, I believe, back in the 80s with the Kuns. If you read that, you know what I'm talking about. I'm glad I read it, but I just don't care about Peacemaker. But you know, in this new James Gunn world, Josh, you're going to have to care about Peacemaker. He's going to be everywhere.
I don't have to watch shit.
Did we talk about Tear Us Apart number 1? I feel like
we were not there that week, I don't believe. I feel Paul was on that week when it came out, the first one.
I believe so.
I liked it. Surprising myself in a bunch of different ways on that first issue is that...
What's the premise again?
When I say surprising myself...
The log line.
There's kids who are part of some sort of mystical assassin cult, and they have to escape because he loves her, and that's weak, and she loves him.
Mm.
But also she's like...
Can't show weakness.
She's like Darth Vader. Like she's like, they're like, oh, she's the most powerful one. She'll destroy the world.
Mm.
I think it's in our world, but then there's also this other... And like in this issue, you find out that these assassins are used you know, by governments or whatever to solve problems. And but guess when they've been sending them out on missions lately, they sort of fuzz out and they just kill everything around instead of just the target. And then so at the same time, the male protagonist and the girl are sort of escaping into the woods. They've never lived in the real world before. And a friendly lady finds them in the woods and feeds them. And, you know, he's like, we should kill her. And they're like, no, this is good. I mean, the thing about it at the end of the day is like, it's really well done. You've got story by Jay Baruchel and Van Jensen, a movie pro and a comic pro. And I believe somebody said last time that he runs like a comic book company in Canada. I don't know if it's a small publisher or whatever, or owns, who knows.
Well, Jay Baruchel's the actor.
Right. Yeah. But he's also a filmmaker and he's not starring in movies as much anymore. He's more of a producer, writer, director kind of thing. Either way, like it's a really well done comic. Apparently, this is crazy, but they found some Italian artist who's pretty good.
Where'd they find an Italian artist?
Apparently, Italy's fucking littered with these people.
Just lousy with comic artists.
Just
everywhere.
Just a glass of wine, cruising around on a Vespa, smoking cigarettes. And
they're asking if they want to buy some merchandise around Trevi Fountain or do you have a comic they can draw? That's all they ask you there now.
You have a very nice looking, huh? Let me show you some of my sequentials, huh?
Are you enjoying this book?
I am. I like it.
I feel like you're conflicted.
I'm not. I'm only conflicted in
you
the
sound
like
pained talking about it.
No, I'm only conflicted in the if I was to read like the premise, and even as I try to describe it to you, it doesn't sound that interesting to me. I think it's really well done, which is keeping me interested in it. The premise, it's not that different from lots of things that I've read. It doesn't sound very interesting to me, but it's done really well, and I am invested in it. I think it's well done. It's surprising more than anything else, because also I think that we were conditioned after a long time, if you see any kind of Hollywood person's name on a cover, it's usually bullshit, and it's not.
Well, it was a long time ago.
I know, but it doesn't matter. Like you are sticks with you. Yes, it does. You were trained a certain way. There was a period
like a popcorn stuck in your gum.
2000 to 2010, you know, when the comics industry was, you know, starting from zero and they were doing anything. Like if you were famous in any capacity and you wanted to write a comic book or be like, they let you in. And
listen,
they
it could
good.
Be worse. It could be a bunch of influencers co-writing comics right now. So at least these are people with skills.
Right. No, but I'm saying it has changed. I feel like that came and went, and not more often than not, because I don't really know. But I feel like seeing a known Hollywood person, because it could be all sorts of things with a cover on it, is not a death knell. I mean, I have been conditioned to feel one way, but you know, you've got, you know, Christopher Cantwell come along and I was like, all right, here we go again. All of a sudden though, he's in it though. He's just comic book writer now. I don't know if that's an extreme example, but, you know, he wrote and produced one of my favorite TV series, you know, of the last two decades. You know, and he comes in and I know there's other examples. I can't think of it. The Keanu Reeves one over at Boom. I didn't stick with it, but I don't think it's bad. I think a lot of times, too, people would lend their names to books and with the thought that this will generate sales. You know, famously, Mayhem by Tyrese. You know, that's sort of the bottom of that barrel.
So I'm hanging on by dear life with the Sacrificers.
I figured you were going
to
say
number
that.
Three. This is feeling like a Seven to Eternity situation where I love Rick Remender as a creator, as a writer, as a person, but there's every once in a while he does something I just don't connect with. And that's not unusual. You know, you're not 100% with everybody.
I think Ryan and I talked about this at some point, and I brought it up to Rick when I talked to him on that. Talksplode is like, I kind of feel like he's cool if you don't like everything, because it means that he's doing a lot of things. I do find this different than Seven to Eternity. Jesus, is that the same book I'm thinking of? I think it is.
Seven to Eternity was the Jerma Pena fantasy book.
Yeah, no, I know.
I lasted, I think, two or three issues because I just couldn't find a hook into it.
Yeah.
And I'm not finding a hook into this one.
That one was the, the big devil creature or whatever wanted to make a deal. He made you an offer. I think that was the thing. I think I lost the thread of that pretty quickly and I never sort of got it back. Mm. I actually like this. It's a stretch for me, but I'm not lost. I sort of get what's going on. I thought the reveal in this one of
the ending was really strong. That was the one thing that kept me from.
We've been reading two parallel stories go on, and then right at the end, they've shoved them in together. There is a heartbreaking moment in this one, which, you know, if you've read Rick Remender, you could see it coming from a million miles away. But there was basically all the sacrificees are brought to this wonderful place. And it sure doesn't seem so bad. And I'm like, you're waiting for the punch or whatever. Oh. But there's a little part of you that thinks, maybe it will be okay. Maybe this is, nope. That's why. And then there was a reason why it was so great. Right up until I don't even want to give it away. Because I don't think this
anytime the poor wretches in the story are offered all the food they can eat, they're over.
Yeah, I know. I liked it. I think it's different. I totally understand what you're saying, but I'm in for now. You know, the other one that I had a hard time with was the underwater one.
Oh, right. That one. Yeah, I think we skipped that one too. Low.
I actually read most of that, but it was a struggle. Low. Exactly.
The cliffhanger is enough to get me to pick up the next issue, but I'm by a thread.
I'm down with Max Fiamara art and Dave McKay terrific. Colors.
Looks beautiful. Just like Seven to Eternity looked beautiful.
With Rick's stuff, if I can hang on to the narrative, I'll probably keep. But then again, like I stopped reading. I didn't like Deadly Class.
Right.
And everybody liked Deadly Class. But I was, you know, there wasn't. But whatever, though.
Which is funny because that's like his most punk rock book, like overtly.
I get it. I totally get it. But like The Scumbag was like my fucking favorite thing ever. And it's nothing like any of the, it's nothing like those books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So who knows?
So those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron has the opportunity every week to vote to add a book to the rundown. That is the only instruction you get. Vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, by one vote over Transformers, we thought we were going to have another double week. The winner was Gods Number One from Marvel Comics. The triple-sized issue written by Jonathan Hickman, drawn by Valerio Schiti, colors by Marte Gracia and Travis Lanham on letters. And this is the big Hickman event that has been teased throughout all the Marvel books recently with those random pages, no context, that have been popping up throughout the comics. Hickman's polarizing. Josh doesn't tend to like Hickman. On balance, I like Hickman. There's certainly things he's written that I haven't responded to at all. I really liked this. I really did. There were things about it that bugged me and I don't understand. But as a piece, as a one issue, as a 60-page comic, I really liked it.
I came not to trust Hickman. I think things would start off strong. And then it was like, it's often way too many things coming at me. And a lot of people over their career tend to learn to pare down the enormous amount of ideas that are going through his head. I mean, it's very fair to say that Hickman has one of the most prodigious world-building imaginations I have ever.
He's got a fertile brain.
Oh my God, it's endless, I think, in there. So I go in warily.
Mm-hmm.
What was his X-Men like arc? What was the main?
Well, he set up the whole Krakoa era.
Okay. Yes, he did.
House of X.
He did. Okay, right. Way. And I was in it at first, and then it got so big and spun out that I didn't know my thread to hang on to. I think he lost me around the time that he did the, I forget the book was about Oppenheimer and all of the...
The Manhattan Projects.
I was like, oh, this kind of... And then it got wacky. And I dropped off of Fantastic Four, blah, 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 blah. So, and it was interesting too, is that they've been teasing this with these like one-page nonsense stories that are appearing in the back of comic books for a while.
Non-sequiturs.
Yeah, like, and I don't remember when I stopped paying. It was like the first two or three of them. I was like, I don't know what this is, and I don't care. I would have read this anyway had it not been the pick of the week because
picture pick.
Yeah, and I did, and I think I'm dragging this out. I think I am. I liked it. I liked it. I did. I wasn't sure. For a
it
while.
Was good.
I was very reticent for a little while because I tend to, and maybe that makes me the problem. I tend to not like new characters, organizations, or histories being introduced into Marvel and DC. Now, I don't know if these characters existed previously. They may have.
No, they're new.
Okay.
I have a similar problem. And we should be okay with new characters, but there's just so many of them already.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
The whole time I was reading this, my only real complaint was, how is this not just the Eternals plus Doctor Strange plus a little bit of Inhumans plus a little bit of like the Orcus Society and X-Men all put in a blender. Like, it just felt like
it's true.
Couldn't you have done this as the Eternals? Like, I don't really care about those characters, but it feels like it's the same kind of thing. These ancient gods all this power.
We've seen a history of Jonathan Hickman really making his mark and putting new things in as much as possible. And it's not necessarily new characters, but it's your Future Foundation. It's your Krakoa. Like, he is creating, his name's in that history book now. So that's what he likes to do, and that's valid. I mean, I would say, if anything, my only real complaint is that main character, I was like, do we need another character who looks just like Tony Stark and Doctor Strange? Right. I mean, I thought...
Oh, you reminded me of something.
Yes.
Sorry, this is going back to Fantastic Four. One of the reasons why I wasn't pick of the week, the Tony Stark dinosaur didn't have a mustache. Okay, let's go back to this.
Valid.
If it had a Tony Stark mustache on the dinosaur, it might have been.
So it starts, and I think I had just read Doctor Strange just before this. And so it starts with this guy, Wynn, who I don't know. I was like, this, you know, because when you read one of these, like, maybe this character might exist. This might be a minor character or even a major character in the Eternals or whatever. I don't know. You can't know all of it. I'm sure some do. And he's talking to Doctor Strange. And I thought, so is this like future Doctor Strange or Splinter Doctor Strange or whatever? And the structure in this was really lovely.
That's why the strength, where, because it was almost a series of short stories.
Well, it's not even that. It's just everything seemed to be, I mean, it might be for you, that's fine. All of these disparate things seem to be happening. And so the Wynn character is tripping his way through the whole thing. And everything that he does with his own personal Wong, he has a Wong or an Alfred, what have you.
He has a Wong with a smartphone.
Yeah, who's dressed exactly like his enemy. There was things.
His ex-wife. Yeah.
You know, all these random things that he seemed to do, of course, they come together in the end and they matter and very thoughtful. And he looks down on the ground at one point. He's like, pick that up. And it's a penny that has John Wilkes Booth on it. So we've got an alternate universe thing going on here. Schrodinger's penny. And then he goes to the collector and he trades that. And it turns out to be a thing. And he trades it to another thing. And it all works together. And it comes together very well formed, very well plotted. But I kind of always felt like I was like, what am I missing?
Yeah, I think I knew that these were all new characters. I wasn't worried about trying to find who they were, but I was more like, are these superfluous? And I kind of feel like they are, but whatever.
You got your guard up a little.
What I liked was all these scenes were sort of like little short stories. Like they had beginning, middles, and ends. I loved the sequence at the bar with his ex-wife, where not his ex-wife yet. He's going to meet his wife at the bar. And first of all, she had a great sequence with the bartender while she was waiting for him. I loved that conversation.
And the way that she explained the stuff was to be like, she's saying exactly what was going to happen. And we didn't have the context for it until it comes into focus later.
Right. And so while he's off
done really well
doing Doctor Strange shit, fighting a demon, he's late. So he gets there and then she's like, we have to break up for this reason. And then we have to get divorced. And he's just like, what if we just didn't? Like, I thought this whole sequence was really like a strong little character piece.
What I liked about that scene was that for a lot of it, I didn't know if he was playing her. Like I felt like there was a very good possibility that he was just conning her to keep her along.
But he's not. He's genuinely in love.
I know that. I feel, and we learned that. And I can't tell if, I think it was stronger that we learned it later rather than sooner. Like surely, like, cause we didn't know him. We didn't know anything. So what was going on? I will say through that whole scene, I really thought, and this would have been a bad idea for the book, but I thought that she had gone in and I thought the organization was going to be AIM. And it was about how like a person becomes one of those buckethead guys. I really thought, I was like, this is going to be awesome. Like we're going to find out like, this is how she becomes an AIM scientist.
Well, that's kind of what I mean is like, why couldn't she have been AIM? Like there's so many different things that exist already in the Marvel Universe that feel like it could have been utilized rather than creating all these new organizations. However, I liked the sequence at the weirdo sex club that they go to.
We're not going to eat much of them. We just do a little bit.
A feast for these demons.
He's quite hungry.
Then they go to the library that I guess Hickman created in his Avengers run, which I didn't read. But like, there's a bunch of Marvel characters there. Like, I just thought, you're right. The structurally, it all worked really well. Where I never felt lost. I never felt overwhelmed. It was a $10 book, but you got 3 issues worth out of it. That to me, that means it's a good value.
Any time I was lost, it was rewarded.
And I think the page count works in your favor because if you'd only read the first 20 pages. It wouldn't have worked. You needed all these 60 pages to tell the opening chapter to make it worthwhile and mean something.
It wasn't a tough read. It wasn't like it was a page turner.
I flew through it. It was good.
I'm thinking of one example is in there is that we leave the library and then we cut and it's Stephen Strange. And I was like, wait, he was just there. What did we do that for? And they explained it. That's what it is. And the other thing was, so he's there, and then immediately the main character, Wynn, says, like, wait, what are you doing? Which is what I was thinking. I was like, that's good. And then he makes fun of him for giving a speech. And then the answer that Doctor Strange gives, he's like, speeches are for children so that they'll attack something so that I have time to go do the actual work. I was like, that's fucking cold, Strange.
It was very Hickman.
It was good. I was impressed by that. But also then I was like, those are like all your friends. You giant asshole. And Stephen Strange, by the way, should be an asshole.
Yeah.
I love it when he is. It's one thing the MCU gets right.
I liked it. I was not weary of reading it, only in the fact that those pages leading up to it were so dumb. That made me weary. Yeah, yeah. And the idea of introducing a whole bunch of new characters and new organizations made me weary. But at the end of the day, I finished it. I was like, oh, shit, that was good.
Again, we all have these ideas. We have biases. We have triggers that tell us, you know, based on a lot of experience, whether something's going to be for us or not. And, you know, sometimes it's exciting to follow through with them and then be surprised. Now, listen.
It's nice to have expectations subverted.
Absolutely. Now, 3 issues from now, I don't know.
Well, let's let's see what happens. Let's just take the win.
I've been hurt before.
And I didn't mean to make a pun there.
Let's talk about Valerio Schiti real quick.
Yeah.
I know the name, but I looked up sort of the history of the guy, and I haven't really read too much of his stuff, I don't think. And I didn't think of that person as a sort of top-level artist, and I don't know that quite that there is, but he was up to the challenge of this thing, and I was very impressed.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot going on. By being able to handle this. It's very similar to Fantastic Four and that feeling.
Yeah. And they're lucky that they picked that guy up at the fountain as opposed to Valerio Fuentemente.
His Vespa had run out of gas. Mm-hmm. And while he was waiting for gas to arrive, Tom Brevoort happened to be walked by on vacation.
I'm going to show you right now. Look at his panel. Huh? He's a good one, huh?
I think he just turned Greek.
So, ratings on Gods, number one, ratings out of 5, I'm giving it a 4.
I was going to say 4.5 almost, but I feel like you liked
it. Well, that's fine if you
do. I feel like you liked it more than me. I'm going to 4.25.
I know you're going to stick with at least the second
Absolutely.
Issue. All right, there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks, patrons, for voting this week to add Gods to the rundown. And now, if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, this isn't official on the patron page, but we do it anyway. You get a superpower live on the show, and this week's recipient is Mark Miller. Not Mark Millar, but Mark Miller.
If it was Mark Miller of Scotland, his power would be getting to sign a gigantic contract.
And not have to give anything back. Yep. So Mark Miller's power is that he can recede into the shadows.
Where'd
so
he go?
If there's any shadow around, Mark Miller can recede into it and then pop out again.
Oh, that's two.
Well, it's the same power. Well, right. You got to be able to leave the shadows.
Yeah, but don't,
you enter the shadow. You got to like, be like, exit
sure,
the shadow.
But like I was when you said it like that, I figured it was like dramatically.
Well, it's dramatic. He slowly recedes into the shadow, but he eventually
is it slowly or is it more like a Batman thing? Can he do it both ways?
It's a recede thing. It's not like instantaneous, but it's so like know, he fades into the shadow.
You're standing there talking to him, right? Mm-hmm. You're Jim Gordon. You look off to the right. You come back to the left. He's gone. That's not a recede.
It depends.
It's
on how
more
long
like
Jim
you're talking
away.
About it, like you're saying that is true, and I will. And he backs away.
Yes,
and it's
that's
dark.
How it is. He fades into the shadows.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know who else can do that? Valerio Schiti. I see it at the back of with you, Paige. Huh?
So, Mark Miller, you can recede into the shadows and also pop out again. You're not stuck in the shadow realm. So, enjoy that power with you.
Wait! Take it with you. You just said shadow realm. I thought we were just working with light here. Have you introduced another element?
I don't know what's in there. Only Mark knows.
They're not just regular
he's
shadows.
In the shadow. He's inside the shadow.
What if he's in a bright room?
Well, then he can't. There's no shadow. He can only recede into a shadow when shadow
there
exists.
There has to be natural shadows. He's not creating shadows. I'm sorry. We had to go back to I needed clarification on these.
I guess he could try to create shadows himself and then go into the shadows create. But
so like
there has to be an actual
like
shadow.
Like a cinematographer.
Yeah, exactly. I need a key light. Mm-hmm. No fill light. To get the fill light out of here. So, yes. There has to be a shadow to go to.
Fair. So, if he lived in like a sunny desert, he is less effective.
Well, sun creates shadow. He's just got
to find the shadow. Right, but there's nothing there.
Things.
Like, you have to, he would have to scrunch his body up and hide behind a cactus so that nothing pokes
out. Well, he could recede into the cactus shadow. There's a shadow there. If it was like a little tiny pebble, that might be more difficult. Patreon.com/fanboy. Thanks for being a patron, Mark. One email.
Which
one you want to do?
I didn't read them. You go ahead.
The same ones from last week.
Let's do the one from Dave.
Oh, really? They're both from Dave.
I know. That's the joke.
I'm telling them. They don't know.
David B. asks, who are your favorite artists that generally aren't considered all-time greats? We all love Perez, Byrne, Simonson, but let's celebrate some people who don't get mentioned as often. I can understand if you can't take this question seriously, as I've only been thinking about it since yesterday when I read an issue of Untold Tales of Spider-Man with Ron Frenz on pencils. That's a good...
It's a good question. That's always tricky because somebody's all time great, but I get what you're saying. Like, we all know who the pantheon
I think it's
are.
Fair. I think it's a fair question because we know, like, there are legendary artists. And this brings me to sort of a thing that you were talking about Daniel Warren Johnson before. And I believe, and they say this in sports, that there are generational talents. And what I feel like when he's talking about all-time greats, he's talking about generational talents. He's talking about Frank Miller. He's talking about, you know, Walt. People say, I mean, I would say Walt Simons is.
John Byrne, said in the email, Walt Simons.
I think Daniel Warren Johnson has a real chance at being one of those people. So that's who we're talking about.
Putting aside like your Kevin Maguire's, your Adam Hughes's, who are sort of all-time greats in their own way.
Yes.
Putting aside like Kurt Swan or Jim Aparo or even Norm Breyfogle.
I mean, Norm Breyfogle was actually one of the first ones that sort of came to mind.
But he sort of defined the whole generation of Batman. I would I don't kinda. Know if he's considered a.
But I don't think people. But like
he is
like,
mentioned all the time.
Yeah, but like we understand.
My point is this: you mentioned M.D. Bright earlier, and I'm going to say M.D. Bright.
Yeah, that was one.
Who his name is Mark Bright. His middle initials D. They called him Doc Bright. He was credited as Mark Bright, as M.D. Bright, and as Doc Bright at comics. And he was a person who did a lot of G.I. Joe comics. He also did Green Lantern and other books I read. And I was always excited. I loved his style. It's a clean, not cartoony style at all, but clean and fun. And I felt like he elevated G.I. Joe when he did his runs on it. And we talked about it. Like G.I. Joe could have some really yeoman work. It had some really kind of terrible work, especially towards the end. But it had a couple of artists, M.D. Bright being one of them. Michael Golden in the beginning?
Oh,
was he one of the artists?
Yeah, he did the NAM anyway.
Oh, yeah, he did the NAM. He did the NAM. I was thinking another G. I was thinking Vietnam. Steve Liahola did the Vietnam flashback issues. But M.D. Bright is someone who I think of a lot as an artist I really liked as a kid who doesn't ever get mentioned ever.
Yeah, I think it's tough because I can sort of look at things. I think I...
Ron Friends is a good one.
I don't love Ron Friends. Just as a thing, I remember, like, he's one of the first artists I knew. I feel like maybe when I was originally reading Thor when I was 11, 12, I think John Romita was on it, and then it went to Ron Friends, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. I tend to like artists the same way that I like bands, meaning that, like, there's a huge band, but then there's sort of less well-known ones, but, like, the people who know it, like, they're great. So I don't think Stuart Immonen necessarily counts.
No, he's a huge artist.
I know, but I don't know that he's an all-time great. I feel like there's a lot of guys who are artists.
Yeah, but he was still a huge artist.
I agree with that. I'm working through it. Like, would you consider Chris Somney?
I mean, I would hesitate to pick anyone who's working right now. I'm going back to the 80s and 90s in my thoughts here.
I'm having a hard time remembering all those things. You know, I think...
We just talked about him on the Booksplode, like somebody like John Bogdanoff, who was a big Superman artist at the time, but he really doesn't... Well, Dan Jurgens is an all-time.
He's almost like an all-time creator more than he is an artist.
Dan Jurgens is still working today, but John Bogdanoff, people who weren't reading back then would have no idea who he is.
I had a lot of favorites in the 2000s who sort of aren't around so much anymore. I'm thinking of like a Steve Ralston.
There you go.
He did a lot of stuff at Vertigo for a while. I love, oh Christ, what's his name? He's on Starman. He was the second guy with the weird name.
Suzuka?
No. I will look it up. I will look it up as we talk.
Oh, Peter Schneeberg.
Yeah, Peter Schneeberg. He was a huge favorite of mine, and he sort of, you know, receded. I think it is safe to say Gabriel Hardman at this point.
Yeah, sure. He's an artist.
Yeah, and he doesn't work, but I mean, he's one of those people, like, if he does a book, I get the book. If Leandro Fernandez does a book, I buy that book. I think of sort of storytelling people. We were talking about Daniel Acuna at one point, and again, he's kind of still working, but I haven't seen him in a while. Just a fantastic artist, you know, who isn't a huge name. Steve Ralston, I said it because I'm actually, as I look right now, next to me, I have that Escapist book, which I've read like half of since you sent it to me, because he's in there. I actually wasn't even thinking of that when I said it. I was thinking of, like, I think he did The Queen and Country at some point.
Steve Lealoha.
Who inked all of Fable.
Steve Lealoha. He was the one who did the G.I. Joe art.
I just had it.
I'll throw Mike Zeck with someone I loved. Tom Grummett, someone I loved in the 90s. Worked a lot. You know, it doesn't work so much anymore.
You know, you could say that he's not current because he went away for a while and is now having a sort of third wind almost given his weird career. But Phil Hester is an artist like that for me. I love Phil Hester's work forever. When he worked with Andy Parks a lot in the early 2000s on Green Arrow and stuff like that, I was a huge fan of that. I mean, you could go on forever, but this was sort of the...
I would even say, if you want to get modern, I would say... Captain America.
Steve Rogers? Steve Rogers was it.
Epting.
Steve Epting.
Epting.
You know, I thought of that for a second. I think that he's one of those ones that I think what he did...
He's not an all-time great, but he was someone who really...
So I don't think I would go read a book specifically because he was working on it. But I think that the difference between him and that kind of artist is that he was exactly the right person to be at the time to be on that book that they were on. And it doesn't necessarily translate to when he does Avengers afterwards or something like that. He was the man for the job at the moment, like a Derek Robertson on Transmetropolitan or Steve Dillon. Steve Dillon's probably.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
Who was the Captain America artist we're always talking about?
Oh, Kieran Dwyer. I love Kieran Dwyer.
Graham Nolan.
Uh huh.
Was terrific. Kieran Dwyer, though.
It doesn't count because he drew, well.
Barry Kitson?
Oh, Barry Kitson. Oh, well,
I'm just saying this. I'm saying another name.
Yeah, Barry Kitson. Wasn't there another artist from that sort of same era who also did those Avengers? I guess it was Barry Kitson. Mark Waid and Barry Kitson did The Nail. No.
No, that was Alan Davis. They did the Justice League year one.
Okay. Oh, I had it. Tony, the Walking Dead co-creator.
Tony Harris?
Not Tony Harris. He did Starman.
Tony Danza?
No. Who did it? Robert Kirkman, and he drew half of Fear Agent.
Oh, right.
I can picture him.
Tony Hopkins.
No, Clanny, it's not that one.
Tony Moore.
I have been a giant Tony Moore fan forever. And while he is very well known for doing that thing, I don't think he's not an all-time. But like, you can really easily say, oh, like he started The Walk, he did whatever. I loved his art. I read anything he did. And I don't think he's not a household name in terms of an artist. Big fan of him.
He hasn't done much.
No, I know. But he's a favorite of mine. In those years, it was a lot of those guys who did cartoonier work before that was accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved artists like that. And it was much more rare back then. You know, another one, sort of in the, maybe more in the vein of a Steve Epting, was Sean Martinborough, who drew Detective when Rucka was on it.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Yeah, and like, you know, that's a name that if I see that name, I get really excited.
He sort of shows up in covers every now and then.
Yeah.
He must be doing
something. But that work on Batman, again, mostly sort of straight up, but a little cartoony, a little more impressionistic, a little simpler of line.
Oh, man. Kieran Dwyer was so young when
he was a baby.
He's only 10 years older than us.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know what he's doing now, but.
His dad's John Byrne.
What?
Yeah, he's John Byrne's
son. You're shitting me.
Nope.
I'm sorry. You just blew the shit out of my mind.
Just blew your mind.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I'm looking at his Wikipedia.
Oh, my God. I think of his bulky shoulders, the body type he did for Captain America. It is a perfect.
Oh, okay. I get it. Sorry. John Byrne is his stepfather. Oh,
that counts. I mean, not exactly the same way, but it counts. Yeah. I don't know. Have you ever heard of Frank Miller? He's pretty good.
Yeah, I was thinking like there's a guy called Steve Ditko, and I feel like he needs more exposure.
I mean, listen,
we could do this for 4 hours.
We really could.
And we've given you lots.
You know, it's guys.
And we've already done 10 minutes longer than I wanted to do.
Great question.
Good question.
I would be fine if this came up again and we could like sit there and look up like all the books you've ever read and be like, oh, that guy, that's whatever. But I think we came up with enough for now.
This might be a fun patron hangout.
You know what, I'm going to give you one more just because I haven't. And he's
all right, one more.
He's a very good friend of mine. But Alex Robinson, who did one of my favorite graphic novels of all time with Box Office Boys and several more after that, I think he is a phenomenal artist. When I go back and like, I know the guy, and then every once in a while you go, if you know somebody, sometimes you go back and you read their stuff and you're like, wow, the guy I know did this, and all of his sequential stuff to me in a different genre than the superhero stuff. I'm really blown away by how incredibly talented he is. And unfortunately, he was very talented, I think, in an era and in a style that wasn't necessarily commercially viable in mainstream comics. And I think that that's a shame because we don't have a mechanism to appreciate that so much now.
Have you heard of Wally Wood?
He's quite good. He's stunningly good.
Thanks for writing in, David. And also, Dave, 2 days this week on the script. Only 1 minute of the show. Sorry, other Dave. Contact at fanboy.com. You can write in. You can also write in for our Media Explode show by putting Media Explode in the subject line. Quick plugs. Last month, we had our Books Explode show. We just mentioned it in the last segment where we talked about the Death of Superman 30th Anniversary Edition featuring the art of John Bogdanoff and Dan Jurgens and Tom Grummet as well.
Nice.
That was super fun. That's on the feed.
Howard
you go back
Porter.
And find that. Howard Porter. He's still working, but he's not a game changer. He's not an all-time great, but he's good. He's polarizing. Mm-hmm. Last week, we had our Media Explode show. It turned out to be an HBO show. We started off talking about the cancellation of Winning Time, which led to talking about the current and future state of HBO, which led to talking about our all-time favorite HBO shows. It was an HBO show, and that was fun, and we enjoyed that, and that's on the feed behind this show. October, there will be a Talksplode, and there will also be another Mediasplode, but it's too soon to tell what those will be about. But the big news this coming week, if you're listening to this show early, is Pick of the Week episode 900 live. We're going to do it live. So as you know, longtime listeners, if you're a new listener, you don't know, is that it's going to be an all email show. We will talk about the pick of the week. We'll talk about the patron pick, which means this week the patron's power is even more powerful than normal because you're going to vote for the only other book we're going to talk about besides the pick of the week. And then we're going to do all emails for about 3 hours after that. So send your emails into contact@fanboy.com, put 900 in the subject line. The deadline to send them in is end of day, October 11th. We have a lot. We could always use more. You can ask us anything. Comics, food, history of our friendship, Josh's sexual history.
Hello.
We don't guarantee we're going to answer what you ask us, but you can ask us anything. And the drunker we get, the more likely we are to answer it. So we'll see how that goes. But you can ask us anything you want about the 18 years of doing this show, stories, anything. It's going to be me and Josh. And at this point, we're pretty sure Ryan's going to join us. So have at it. Contact@fanboy.com, 900 in the subject line. We look forward to it. And like I said, we'll be doing it live. It'll be on our YouTube page. There'll be links on our website. You can find that at youtube.com/ifanboy. The show will start Thursday, October 12th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And it'll go for about 3 hours. Stop in for a few minutes, hang out for the whole time. Mike Romo's going to be there. Hopefully some other people will be hanging out in the chat room. It'll be fun.
He's like our Charles Nelson Reilly.
He was like, oh my God, I'm so
excited. Terry Garr, Charles Nelson Reilly, Mike Romo.
I had to send him a calendar invite so he wouldn't forget. I'm looking forward to it. It's happening in just a few days, and it's quite an accomplishment for us. We feel very proud about it, and we look forward to hanging out with you while we record the show live. And that's happening this week. So then you can find all the rest of those 1,300 shows over the course of 18 years over at fanboy.com or on our feed. They're all there. All the pick of the weeks, all the books explodes, all the talks explodes, all the media explodes, all the explodes are found there. The special editions, they're all still on the feed. You can follow us at Fanboy Comics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, and sometimes the best week in panels. And individually, we're C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram, at least until they start charging us.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I'm paying for that.
I had another name for you. I'm going to say it. I don't think it's now, but someday it will absolutely be valid. Chris Burnham. You could subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy,
sure,
where you will find all of our old videos, and we post this show every week there. You can subscribe. That's probably helpful to us. I'll be honest with you, folks. It's not a money play over at YouTube. It's really more.
Oh, no.
It's for your convenience and enjoyment. Yeah. So please consider writing a review.
I don't think you've ever seen a penny from YouTube.
Never. No.
Not once. Not one penny.
Consider writing us a review or leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts.
I think we owe them money.
I think it's very... Well, we're going to soon enough. Eventually, they're going to figure out, hey, you know what? A lot of people should
we're
pay
us. We're hosting
all
this stuff
exactly.
For free.
Well, it's not...
They're making lots of money.
They're doing okay.
Yeah.
Wherever you get your podcasts, leave a thing. If YouTube, subscribe. Like, I don't care. You know, could you subscribe to it? You're not going to... You know, you don't have to watch it, but just do it.
Click the bell. Yeah. Whatever that happens when you do the bell.
Like and smash. Hey, guys. Bro, that's the show. Thank you for listening.
That is the show. I'm looking forward to episode 900 this week. Come hang out in the chat room at youtube.com/ifanboy. We hope to see you there. Be there, be square. And until then, I'm Connor.
That would make me Josh. I never finished Moby Dick either.
Took me a second, but I got it.
She thinks my tractor's sexy.